This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Karen Huffner to the show. She is Associate Professor in Counseling and Forensic Psychology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and author of two books entitled Overcoming the Devastation of Legal Abuse Syndrome and Unlocking Justice. Karen, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good today.
Good to have you on the show. Give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
Right now I'm in Colorado. We are doing some work here. I travel around a bit, Florida, Colorado, Nevada, and New York.
What is legal abuse syndrome?
Good question. It is when you are in a court of law and there is power differential, and somehow you find yourself unable to function well. You lose that edge of executive functionality. You get symptomatic. You can't talk. You say, I don't know what happens. I start crying when I'm in the courtroom. I can't concentrate. My mind goes elsewhere. You then need accommodations, just like if you needed a wheelchair to get in that courtroom. You need, and the federal law provides, that you have accommodations. If for any reason you don't get those accommodations and you are left struggling and unable to truly function in that courtroom, I consider that legal abuse.
So is it a matter of extending the ADA, Americans with Disability Act laws, to the hidden disabilities that are not readily visible?
Yes. When the ADAAA, the Amendments Act, passed in 2008, went into effect in 2009, it overturned four Supreme Court decisions that had narrowed the scope of accommodating disabilities. When that went into effect in 2009, it broadened that scope again. And it said anything, any impairment that causes you to be unable to function on equal footing in that courtroom must be accommodated. That's a mandate. You don't file a motion. You don't ask the judge if you can please have it. It's not discretionary. The law says it's your civil right. You must have it. Therefore, you go to court administration, just like the place that handles a wheelchair ramp. It is the same thing. So you automatically must be accommodated reasonably when you have a disability of any kind.
Do you think that this kind of accommodation would bother some judges, and some judges and maybe even juries may not rule favorably toward whatever side you happen to be on because you're, you know, asking for special privileges and things like this? How do we overcome that issue?
That is a problem. However, that's a bias, and that is someone that doesn't know the law well. Because the law says, federal law says, we don't care what you think, you have to do it. It's a civil right. So it happens, though. And one of the things that we do in a courtroom is we keep it very unobtrusive. So because it can go two ways. A judge can either feel really sorry for our client and maybe, you know, be a little biased for them, or be turned off by their disability and just want to find against them, or a jury. So we try and deal with those accommodations so that person comes in as equal as possible in that courtroom, and the vision of the person is as equal as possible. We are not vying for any kind of special favors, and I make that very clear when I make the request.
Sure, sure. And so how do you make that request again? What do? You said you don't file a motion, you don't ask the judge, you go to where?
The ADA Access Coordinator in Court Administration.
Does every courthouse have one of these? I mean,
they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Now they don't, because they don't all have them. Because when the law came down, it was unfunded and came without directions. They just said, okay, the law passed, now you have to do it. So we go into the courts, and sometimes the judges are doing their best, but they said, we got no direction, we have no funds to provide the things you're asking, what can we do? So we have to work it out with them. And as long as they're cooperative, we always can work it out. But they're not ready for us. That's why we're training so much. We have a course starting July 11th. It will be an online course, self-paced online course. But this is the way we're doing it, so that we can train people. I want an army of advocates trained around this nation who have taken this online course, gotten this certification, so they can go in that courtroom with a client and be sure that they have a fair chance. They might win or lose, but it's got to be fair.
Almost everybody listening would agree that the court system is just so rigged. It's so unfair because the lawyers are, half the time, they're just crooks. They lie and lie on both sides of things. Litigation stresses everybody out. I mean, who isn't stressed by litigation? Where do you draw the line? Where do you call it a disability versus not being a disability? Isn't that kind of intangible?
That's a really good question, because what's happening now is what's called the medical model. And that means the courts just grandfathered into a concept of, oh goodness, if you need an accommodation, something's defective with you, and we have to figure out what it is you think will help make up for it. And somebody with no medical credentials makes that decision, usually a clerk that has not been trained even in basic ADA. So this is a faulty model. We're trying also, as we train our advocates, we're trying to urge the courts to go to what's called a social model. And that means all human beings use the court sometime. All human beings will have some disability sometime. We just have a list of accommodations that we pre-approve, like giving them breaks, letting them record their sessions, having a shortened court day, various things like that. I can bring an advocate, can bring a service dog, make a checklist. Anybody coming into court, they say, if you have any of these problems, check what you need. They check what they need, and we treat these disabilities as they are a normal part of living. All of us are going to face this sometime.
Tell me about recording sessions. What did you mean when you said that?
I like them to be able to have their own digital recording of the proceedings for their private use. Many of them have memory deficits. If you have PTSD, you have expressive speech problems, but you also dissociate. When the opposing counsel is asking you the most critical thing, it is so overwhelming to your limbic system that you go into self-protection and your mind goes elsewhere. And my client will say, what did he say? Or what did they say? And I say, Your Honor, we need just a minute. We need to take a minute, rewind the tape, replay it so you can hear it, and then we'll come back and answer. So this only makes it fair. That's all we're asking. We're not asking for it to be the formal record.
I mean, but this is open court. Doesn't everybody have the right to record?
No. Oh, goodness, no. Well, you know, a judge the other day said, we may as well forget about it because everybody can record. They've got earrings, necklaces, keychains, phones. You can record with anything anymore, and good video recording. So he said, we can't control it. I don't know why we try. But somebody was complaining that they didn't want it recorded. Well, I understand the court doesn't want you to think you're making the formal history of the case. However, everybody in a courtroom should be able to record their own for their own use.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good. Are both of your books about the same issue that we're discussing now, or do you cover some other areas?
The first one came out in 1995. And that was when I first discovered legal abuse syndrome. I had a private practice, and I was watching my clients those who are in litigation not getting better like those who are not in litigation. And I'm saying, could litigation be a variable as to treating someone in a counseling setting? And so I did 7 years of peer review, lots of research, had a lot of help. Alan Dershowitz at Harvard was writing his book, The Abuse Excuse, so he did a lot of critical review for me. And a lot of good things happened that brought that book about. And that was the development of 8 steps to keep you from being destroyed, devastated, while you are in the courtroom. Now, the ADA was signed in 1990, so we had the original, but it was being weakened by these Supreme Court decisions. 2008, when we got the new law, I wrote Unlocking Justice, and I included the Americans with Disabilities Act Amendments Act into the whole picture and how you use it with the 8 steps that are the protocols, various counseling steps and coaching steps so that you make it through, and then the laws, the rules, so that you don't, if you falter in that court, your opposition will eat you alive. And so if you make the mistake of filing a motion and saying to the court, I have this problem, I have to have accommodations, please, Your Honor, the other side immediately says, we want to interview the doctors, we want them to prove that they've got it, we want them to tie it to the accommodation, and all of a sudden your whole case is off on a tangent of you proving your disability.
Yeah, right, right. What did you just say, tie it to the case or something? What did that mean?
I can't remember which...
You basically just said, maybe we should rewind the tape. you said something like, you know, you're made to prove it, you're made to, you know, other side will eat you alive.
How does the accommodation you're asking for relate to that disability? Prove that to me. Well, no, I don't have to do that. Federal law says no. Federal law says if I have one disability, one diagnosis, I'm entitled to reasonable accommodations, and I don't have to exhaustively prove anything. So you never open it up in the adversarial court. But if you make that mistake, all of a sudden your whole case is around your disability.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's true. The other side will eat you alive. Any advice you can give the listeners just in general for winning in court, for having successful litigation outcomes?
Well, number one, you have to think about advocacy. You have to have somebody you trust that can help you sort through all of the stressors and all of the records and all of the things that are happening. You need a best friend or a trained advocate, preferably a certified advocate from John Jay College. But the critical thing, if you do not have that person, it's easy to just get a lawyer. You got a problem, just go get a lawyer. So you go get a lawyer, you give them a 5-figure retainer, you take everything to them, and they spend $350 an hour going through all of the stuff you took them. Much of it belongs with the advocate or with a counselor. It does not belong in the legal office. So first of all, you need to sort that. You need to be sure you can take your case to completion. 70% of cases die because they run out of money. They run out of the ability to keep fighting.
Yep. You know, picking a lawyer is so difficult. Of course, and this is an area that's kind of interesting, maybe related to what you're saying and what your body of work about, is the idea of representing oneself, of being a pro se litigant, and how the courts seem to be so prejudiced against that. Judges will not seemingly make any accommodation for people. I mean, not being able to afford an attorney is a disability. You know?
Yeah. We are virtually, the majority of Americans are priced out of our court system.
Oh, of course they are.
We virtually cannot go into court with an attorney and see a case through. It's impossible.
Let me just mention something about that. The reason I started this show and the related website is because what happens in litigation is typically, Karen, and you know this all too well, first, you're victimized by the other side, either the plaintiff or the defendant, but say you're the plaintiff and, you know, someone rips you off in a deal and you're victimized, right? And then you hire a lawyer to try and get some justice, and you're victimized again by your own attorney half of the time. It's just such a terrible system. It's good in concept, but the lawyers have just, they've just priced everybody out. What can be done? What is the solution?
Well, I'm in Colorado, and I said we're doing quite a bit of work here because 70%, more than 70% in Colorado go into court with no lawyer. They can't afford them, and that's that. We have to face the fact.
In regular superior court or municipal-type court, we're
in
not talking small
court,
claims, right?
They cannot afford a lawyer, and they go in without one. Now, what we're doing in Colorado, we have some lawyers who will volunteer time to meet with these pro se people and help them somewhat. Many of the judges here are very attuned to the pro se and they're patient beyond comprehension. They will sit and guide them and try and be fair. Some are not. Across the nation, that's not true. And they hate to see a pro se coming. But I'm telling you, lawyers have a miserable life. Because the minute they try and aggressively advocate for their client, they wind up in trouble with the bar. They wind up with the pressure of all of that being brought down on them. And I've worked on cases where that's exactly what happened. And then we have the C word. It's got to be out there as not a word to ever use, the crazy word. It has no medical or legal value. But the minute somebody comes in and says, well, you know, they're crazy, it's only used to degrade that person. And that word should not be allowed in any court ever. So we're trying to get the entire concept of mental health, mental injury. It used to be that if you went in on a custody case, they would have you both take psychological evaluations. And whoever came up with a diagnosis didn't get the kid. Hmm. That's absolutely unlawful. You can't use a diagnosis to deny custody or visitation.
Hmm. Yeah.
Only behavior.
Right. Very interesting.
That whole psychological evaluation, that whole cottage industry that developed around the court, controlling custody and that kind of thing, really needs to be questioned.
Yeah, sure does. Karen, give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more.
My website is equalaccessadvocates.com, plural advocates, equalaccessadvocates.com. And my email is legalabuse@gmail.com.
Karen Huffner, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I just had a wonderful time.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com. or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.